So again, work should be balanced, food should be balanced, sleep should be balanced. And so that he will continue this topic in the next verse, verse number 17, about balanced. Yuktahara viharasya.
Yukta cheshtasya karmasu.
Yukta svapnavabodhasya. Yogo bhavati dukkha. Together. Yuktahara viharasya. Yukta cheshtasya karmasu. Yukta svapnavabodhasya. Yogo bhavati dukkha. Dukkha. Dukkha means destruction of sorrow. Now, how many people here want destruction of sorrow? Everybody, right? Everybody wants. So, Bhagavan is telling us how you can get destruction of sorrow. So, this is a verse we can all relate to. So, he is just further emphasizing the point that he made in the last verse. Yukta here means balanced. Yukta has many meanings. Yukta also means attached to the higher. But here, yukta means balanced. Ahara. Ahara means food. So, all intake. Not only food, but intake through all sense organs should be balanced. Then vihara. Vihara means fun, recreation, enjoying life. That also should be balanced. Yukta cheshtasya karmasu. Cheshta means activities. So whatever activities you are doing, work and all, should be balanced. Yukta, balanced. What? Svapna avabodha. So sleep and wakefulness should also be balanced. And why? Because this yoga bhavati dukkha. Ha means destroyed. So that's why hanti, hanyate, you know, it comes from that root. So ha means dukkha. So dukkha is destroyed by living a life of moderation. Ahar, diet. Vihara is the fun or recreation. Karma, activity. Sleep and wakefulness. So diet we have already talked about. You know, we already talked a lot about diet. And activity, overwork. You know, in certain professions, they work all day. That also is not good. You know, too much of work. I mean, I know you have to, but eventually one should see how I can regulate my life so that I balance it. Where I need time for work, but I also need time for enjoyment, for recreation. I need time to just sit and do nothing. Because we are not used to that. So just sit and do nothing. So what should we do next? Do nothing. So we don't, how do I do that? How do I do nothing? So we want instructions now, how to do nothing. You know, so just sit and do nothing for next 10, 20 minutes. I'm going to do nothing. And even reduce your thinking, just watch your breath and then just chant the mantra and ultimately just try to make your mind focused on the Lord. Or you can even do it on an object, sit in front of the Lord and just put your mind only on the Lord's face and Sri Krishna's flute and his feet or Jesus, you know, his eyes, the compassion in his eyes. So just focus your mind on that and ultimately close your mind, close your eyes and become still. So activity also should be balanced. You know, work is necessary, but it should be balanced with enough time for rest, enough time for, you know, relaxation and then enjoyment. You know, some people say, now I am retired, so maja karo, enjoy. I asked somebody, you know, what, you're retired, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to go to gym 7 days a week and enjoy my life. He said, is that all your goal? You're going to live another 20 years? That's all you're going to do? Go to the gym and enjoy? When is time for God? When are you going to start thinking about Bhagavan? enjoyment is good. Yeah, travel is good, but excessive travel, you know, just people just mindlessly go from one country to another, one city to another. Yeah, some amount of travel is good. Some amount of enjoyment is good. Some amount of entertainment is good. But constantly living in that state is not good. You have to, ultimately, we have to go towards God. All of us, whether you go in this life or next life or 10 lives from now, 100 lives from now, sooner or later, just as every river has to go to the ocean. River cannot stop and say, I'm not going. The flow of the water will push it. So you and I have to go to God. So jana hi hai, to start from this life itself. Why wait till next life or five lifetimes from now? I don't know where I'll be. And there are three states Gurudev has described: waking, dream, and deep sleep. So I think some of you might be in that third state of deep sleep. But the point is that's why I keep telling jokes, so that people don't fall asleep. So deep sleep is the state of non-apprehension, where I don't perceive anything. When I'm in deep sleep, nothing. You know, there are no thoughts, there is nothing at all. It is complete stillness. And what is dream? Dream is misapprehension. So what happens in my dream, I don't see the waking world. I am half awake. You know, I'm just waking up. So my mind creates this fanciful world. So not seeing this real world, what we call real, in my dream, I create a dream world, where in the dream world there is a house, and then I'm there, and then there is a car, and there is a train, and I see the sky, I see everything, birds, everything I create in my mind, and that is called misapprehension. And then when I wake up, I say, oh, thank God, you know, I was dreaming that I'm a beggar. Thank God I'm not a beggar. Thank God I'm... So that is called misapprehension. But the saints tell us this world is also a misapprehension, because our true nature is Om or Brahman, and all of us are that. Everything is that Brahman. It's a non-dual. It's not that me and Brahman or me and God. There is only God alone. And when I don't perceive Brahman everywhere, then I project, okay, she is my friend, he is my enemy, this is a chair, this is a glass. But everything for a yogi or for a wise person, there is no non-apprehension. He is never away from God. That's why when Vivekananda asked Ramakrishna Paramhans, have you ever seen God? He said, I see God more clearly than I see you. Because he always lived in that state of... So that is called true apprehension of the truth. And then as we study the Bhagavad Gita, we'll find there are so many sadhanas. Like in the third chapter, Bhagavan tells us, do karma yoga, do, you know, service. Then in the fourth chapter, he'll say, work with others. In the fifth chapter, he says, without doership. And now sixth chapter, he's saying, meditate every day. And then seventh to twelfth chapters will be bhakti, you know, about God. And eighth chapter, he talks about God. Tenth and eleventh about God. Twelfth is all bhakti. And then he will talk about knowledge, you know, in the 13th chapter. He says so many sadhanas are given. Bhagavan is saying do karma yoga, then do bhakti, then do meditation, then do dhyan, then do sit down and read, and then say who am I. Where is the time to do all those things? Every day should I do all of those? No. What they are saying is that these are the choices available to you. And depending on your physical capability, on your mental state, like a person who is more active will do karma yoga as a predominant means. Yes, he can have some love for Lord, he should be reading, but most of his time will be spent in service. Somebody who is emotional and she loves God and she can cry for God and say, God, why don't you come? Somebody like Mirabai, then, you know, the path of bhakti, path of knowledge. Another person says, I'm an intellectual, I love to read, path of knowledge. Path of love, path of action. But little bit of the others can be done, but one of them should become your main goal, and then it may evolve. In the beginning, even in the sixth chapter, Bhagavan says, in the beginning, you do karma yoga, and then once your mind becomes still, then you don't need to do as much activity. You can sit and contemplate. So balanced the sadhanas and picking what is good for you. And in activity, they say that one should definitely walk every day. And suppose your job involves sitting, then every hour or 2 hours, every 2 hours, get up and just walk for a few minutes. In fact, nowadays the Apple Watch also will tell you, you have been, you know, sitting for an hour, get up and walk, and it's time for you to stand. The idea is that too much of sitting is also not good. Sitting for too long a period, just get up and stretch your legs. It's also good for health. You know, get up and take a few deep breaths, or at the end of the day, maybe walk half an hour or 45 minutes, mile or mile and a half. Walking is the best exercise. It gets your mind out and, you know, you breathe the fresh air. If you can walk in a park, that's very good. But doing the activity, again, you know, then some people go to the other extreme where they run marathons. Now, marathon is good, but you can't run that forever. You know, after a year or two, your joints give out, your knee or your ankle. So some amount of maybe going hiking is good, you know, on the weekend and all. But again, balanced. Neither sitting for too long nor overwork. So balance, balance. That is again and again emphasized. And what is sorrow? And one of the other commentaries I was listening, he says that living a life of selfishness, where I work for myself only, leads to sorrow in this life and future lives. And living a life of unselfishness leads to joy in this life and other life. We think it's the other way around. You know, if I don't get for myself, then that will be sorrow. I must have for myself. And giving to others, that is sorrow in our mind. They said no. Because when you live a life of selfishness for me, myself and I, sooner or later that will lead to sorrow, because your karmas, the negative karmas, will keep accumulating, where all I'm doing is working for myself. What can I get out of it? So and then such a person who has lived a life of selfishness definitely will have sorrow in this life, and towards the end he will have, and his future life will be sorrowful. But once you start sharing and giving, there is so much joy. And one thing, the Lord's grace is infinite. The more you give, the more he gives back. So then you have joy in this life and in future life. And why does sorrow come? One is, of course, we can say it's due to karmas. But another commentary I was listening, he says God is like a PE teacher. Now, suppose somebody is out of shape, right? He's totally, has never walked, never run. He's just gained a lot of weight. And he's so, the PE teacher says, you know what? For you, there will be extra running. So he gets extra running. And the others, you know, who are in good shape, he says, okay, you run. After a while, once that person is got in shape, then he says, now you don't need to run extra. You're fine. You know, now you can be with the others. So similarly, sorrow is our extra exercise given by God. Because you have lived a life of selfishness and you have never done anything, so you are getting sorrow. But once you start working for others, then he says, now not only you don't get sorrow, but you can share your joy with others. So that is why sorrow is our way for the Lord to wake us up. And so even excessive meditation is not good. See, sitting for too long, some people sit for hours, and yeah, if you go for a retreat or a 1 week camp, and that is good where they do many hours, but in general it should be balanced. You know, 1 hour maximum, or maybe split it up, half an hour in the morning, half an hour at night. And so what this is telling us, that our whole lifestyle should change. When I'm on the spiritual path, everything should be regulated. What I eat, what I do, how many people I meet, what I talk, everything should be regulated, and your lifestyle should change. And they describe meditation as being a shock absorber, just as on the road when you're going in the car and a bump comes, immediately the shock absorber, you know, absorbs the shock. And so you don't feel it. And if the shock absorber is not working, like in India when you go in these really old cars, you feel every bump. So meditation is a shock absorber, that when life gives us bumps, gives us problems or sorrows, A person who is able to meditate is able to quieten his mind, and no matter how many sorrows come, his mind is always connected with God. And so such a person, he or she will not feel as much sorrow. Sorrows will come, but she will be able to absorb them. And what they say, regular training, just as we have to train our body, you know, for regular exercise, we have to. So also train your mind to always be with God, and train your intellect to always have the right thoughts. So it's a gradual training, gradual process. And these, using these the hints of these today's verse, it will tell us how to train our body, our mind, and our intellect, all three. As you can see, today we talked about training all three to turn them towards God. And then the question comes, how do I know I'm progressing? You know, people ask, I have been sitting for meditation for so long, or I have been reading these books for so long, I have been, you know, doing pujas for so long, prayers. When do I know that I'm progressing? Next week. We'll talk about that next week. How to know that I'm progressing? I'll give you a very beautiful quote by one of the Swamis about that. So we'll meet next week. We have about 10 minutes. Any questions or comments about anything that we covered, or anything extra that you want to bring up, even doesn't have to be what we covered today.
Going back to what you were saying about the three states of being, wouldn't it be more appropriate to say that the three states of being are, okay, deep sleep, the dream state, if the dream state is misapprehension, then what we call the waking state is also misapprehension.
Yes.
And so the waking state is really when you're self-realized.
Yeah, that's the fourth state. That's called Turiya. That's the fourth state. So the waking is also misapprehension. Only when you wake up to that fourth state, that is called the waking. So the waking and dream state are bundled as one. For the wise person, this so-called waking world and the dream world, there's no difference. So there are four states. It's called Turiya. Yeah, the Turiya, or the state of enlightenment. Yeah, in that enlightened state, then the person has no misapprehension, because there is no non-apprehension. He sees Brahman everywhere. And then once he sees that, then there is no misapprehension. Then there is no enemy, no friend, no male or female, but everything is that. So that is the fourth state of waking or enlightenment. Thank you for bringing. I meant to cover it, but somehow it slipped. So thank you. Yeah.
I have one question.
Ah, Boli. Yes.
You are talking about the Bhagavad Gita. But what is the actual meaning of the Bhagavad Gita?
Oh, Bhagavad Gita. Gita means song, and Bhagavad means a song of the Lord. So because Gita is composed in a meter, see every verse, normally people don't talk like that. Aise baat nahi karte. They don't talk in meter and in the verses. So it is a song composed by the Lord himself. So all the 18 chapters are his instructions to us. So Bhagavat means of the Lord. Gita means the song.
So according you and according mine, it's the same. I think whatever is said, it's said by the God by himself.
Right.
And he has sung.
Yes.
That the whole the song.
Right.
At the Bhagavad Gita.
Ji, it's a song of the Lord. Yeah, and Ved Vyas Ji put it to the pen. See, the teachings of Bhagavan Sri Krishna to Arjuna were put in a poetry form by Ved Vyas Ji.
That I want to know it.
Right, in the Mahabharata, you know, it comes, the Bhagavad Gita comes in the Mahabharata before the Kurukshetra war. So it is there, so the 700 verses. But that's why it is verses. That's why it is a song. It is not poet. It's not prose. Prose. It is poetry. Just as Upanishads are written in prose. Upanishad, the guru and the teacher or student are talking. So it is prose, but this is poetry. Yeah, it's a beautiful song. Actually, everything, any problem, anytime, anywhere you have, there is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. The more now I study, constantly it comes. Anytime, any problem, anywhere, there is an answer. The Lord has covered everything in 700 verses. There is no problem ever that you can encounter that is not covered. Now that I have been, you know, covering and studying this, I find it's beautiful. It's such a blessing to have this wonderful teaching by the Lord Himself. Bhagavan Sri Krishna in His own words, through His own mouth, He has given it to us.
So it means the human being is so blessed by the God.
Yes.
How to live.
Right.
On the earth.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it is a blessing from God to us how to live on earth. So Bhagavad Gita is a manual of life. Just as when you have an instruction manual when you buy a new car or a phone or a TV. So this is an instruction manual.
Another question is, this is not related with this. Dharma and Sampradaya. What the difference?
Dharma, Sampradaya is what sect you belong to. Dharma is what is my duty. Dharma dharayate iti dharma. That which sustains society is the dharma. So the duty of what I should do, what I should not do, and what is my true nature, that is dharma. What is my dharma? Like dharma of sugar is sweetness. Dharma of salt is saltiness. Dharma of karela is bitterness. So what is my dharma? What is my true nature? My true nature is Om Satchidanand Brahm. That is dharma. Sampradaya is what I identify with, what group, whether Hindu or Muslim or Vaishnava or Shaivite or all those. So that is sampradaya. That is the difference. So dharma is all inclusive because dharma of everybody is the same. While sampradaya can be different based on my family, based on my upbringing, how I have been taught to grow up, how I am taught to worship. You know, Christians will go and kneel down. Hindus will worship. So different ways. So that is sampradaya and dharma. That is the difference.
According my my thinking, the dharma, that is religion, and sampradaya. It's a sampradaya is a branches of the dharma.
Right.
Dharma cannot be destroyed.
Right.
It's eternal.
Right.
But sampradaya may be destroyed.
May be changed. Right.
After this, some. Years or 1,000 years or 2,000 years, whatever it means. But still the tree is that.
Right. That's also correct.
It is or right. Not?
Yeah, correct. So that the eternal values, that is the eternal, that is the same in all the religions. And that is dharma, yes. So it's the correct. Dharma is eternal and these are all divisions of that. That also is fine. That also is correct. Sanatan dharma, yes. The ancient. But the root of dharma is dhri, which is dharayate. That which sustains everything is dharma, which is eternal. That which sustains us, teaches us eternally. Yeah, thank you. That's good. Good. Thank you. Anything else?
In the book you said about Siddhartha.
Yes.
It's a very nice book. There's a movie also.
Acha, on Siddhartha.
Somebody made the movie. Shashi Kapoor was acting and was.
Really?
Yeah.
Acha. I didn't see.
It is in Italy.
Yeah.
Oh, acha. No, but the book had a very strong.
Very strong book.
Very beautiful book.
I think the one thing I was very impressed, he went to Buddha and he got the knowledge and he didn't stay there.
Right.
He just kept going.
He kept going.
But that was not his final place.
Right.
And that's also can happen to people, like, you know, after getting so much. You come to the point where you might want to go. So it's
right,
very, very
right,
interesting.
Right, right. Because he even leaves that.
Yeah, he leaves that.
He doesn't become, he leaves the monkhood also.
Right, and he went to the river and then he stayed there.
Yeah, and becomes a boatman. Yeah. And one of his friend comes there.
Yeah, he stayed.
His friend comes and he doesn't recognize him because he says, there's so much peace on your face. Right. What happened to you?
Yeah,
right. His friend actually didn't. He recognizes the friend. He says, is that you? Because they were monks together. And this friend remained a monk, but Siddharth becomes a boatman. Right.
Very nice.
Yeah, nice book.
In fact, it's in the library also here.
Here?
Yeah, in local library.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to buy.
Right. Yeah, it's a good book to read. I really enjoyed reading it.
What's the name of the book?
Siddharth.
Just like Gautam Buddha, but it's not Gautam Buddha. It's the story.
It's a story.
Siddharth is just the name that he used.
Yeah. Of the monk, the story of the monk who later on meets Buddha also in that book. Very nice. It's a very short book, probably 150-200 pages. Yeah, very quickly you can read. Very nice. And very, very, very inspiring book.
Are there, I don't know whether there are other places in the writings that maybe give more rules about reading, but it's interesting to compare these guidelines, really, because if you compare it, for instance, to Leviticus in the Judeo-Christian
Bible,
oh my goodness, they go through a whole list of things not to eat, certain animals not to eat. It's much more rigorous.
Right.
I mean, it's none of this moderation.
Right. Actually, 14th chapter talks about that. In the 14th chapter, Sri Krishna talks about what to eat, what not to eat in more detail. But basically, you have to go to Manusmriti and the ancient texts where they go into a lot of details of what to eat, what not to eat. But it's very hard to practice. So I think basically moderation, eating within, and also what you are used to eating. Suddenly you tell somebody, you can't eat meat, you have to be totally vegetarian. It may not be possible for that person. Or somebody who is totally vegetarian, you take him to the Eskimos in the Arctic where there is no vegetables. Yeah. So depending on the situation, depending on your, and then also a person doing a lot of physical work, his diet will be different from a person who sits on the computer all day. So everything, so it's very hard to give rigid rules that you must eat this and you must not eat this. A lot of it has to do with what you believe in and, what is your, non-violence, people think, So all those factors come into eating. Your age, when you're young, you can eat more. When you're older, all those factors, all those things. So it you have to go play it by ear, I think, rather than give rigid rules. And see you next week. Hari Om. Thank you. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhavave. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru.